So, what I want to do, what we're going to do tonight, I'm going to get a panel of dads out here, and we're going to ask them some questions in a few moments. But what I want to do is to start by just talking a little bit about fatherhood and it, in its context in the Bible, and in particular, an example of a father that perhaps doesn't immediately spring to mind when we think of a biblical example of a father. So if I can have that first slide up for the message, thanks, Steve. It will be there on the screen somewhere. So when we think of fathers found in the Bible, the Apostle Paul's probably not someone who's going to immediately spring to mind. And there's been some theological discussion about Paul's marital status. And the general conclusion is that Paul was potentially married at one stage, but certainly not at the time he was converted. And the thinking is he may have been a widower. But what is generally agreed upon is that Paul, in the physical sense, never had kids of his own. But what we find is that he was certainly a really significant, influential father figure to Timothy, who was his partner in ministry, and Timothy being younger than himself. And there are many who would describe Paul as probably a father of the Christian church. What we do know about Paul is that he was passionate about Jesus, and he was passionate about the growing up of the church. He nurtured it, he guided it, he stood up for it, and ultimately he died for it. So Paul had these great father-like qualities, and tonight we're going to look at just a few before we get the our dads out tonight. So the first thing that comes to mind when we think of Paul and his relationship to the church is how much he loved it. And he lived out this kind of win-win truth. Paul was so completely committed to the idea of spending an eternity with Jesus in heaven. He was sold out to that. But he was completely convinced of the promises and the reality of heaven. And he really kind of looked forward to death because he had a pretty hard time here on earth. But what we find is that Paul was actually torn. Because even though for him he realized that heaven was the ultimate goal for him and how he longed to be there, but he had this love for the church. And he was kind of in a healthy way obsessed with the church as a movement of God's people. And he wanted to see it flourish and grow, but he knew that he needed to be around because he still had work to do in teaching and encouraging the church to ensure that it reached the maturity as the community of love and faith that God wanted it to be. And Paul's love for the church would see him serve and suffer for it in many ways and for many years. And we see in Philippians, Paul makes this statement. He says, "For me to live is Christ and to die is gain." This is this kind of win-win relationship or the way he was living life. "If I'm to go on living in the body, this will mean fruitful labor for me. Yet what shall I choose? I do not know. I am torn between the two. I desire to depart and be with Christ, which is better by far. But it is more necessary for you that I remain in the body," because he was convinced that God still had a work for him to do. So the other thing that we find about Paul is he had this incredible vision for the church. And the vision that he had was a reflection of the vision that Jesus has for his own church. And Paul's dream or vision for the church was fueled by two main things. Firstly, it was fueled by the revelations that God was giving to him. So Paul walked very closely to God, and God would speak to him and show him stuff about himself, show him stuff about the church and about how people related to one another and how people related to God. And Paul was just so invested in seeing the church grow and develop into all that it could be. And the other thing, and we've already touched on it, is his love for the church. That's what fueled his vision. He had this incredible love for the church and the world that so desperately needed to know the joy that can be found in relationship with Jesus. And Paul's letters that we read in the New Testament, they're just chock full of teaching and rebuking and encouraging, all aimed at having people as individuals and as a community open up to the Spirit of God and allowing him to kind of recalibrate or change their thinking and their attitudes in ways that would have them point to Jesus. So he was always saying to the church, come on, guys, come on. This is who God wants us to be. The other thing that Paul certainly showed in spades was strength. This is a pretty great thing for the culture in which we live. Paul knew what he believed. He knew what was true. He stood up for what was right, and he stood up for something no matter what the personal cost was for him. He wasn't swayed or moved. And this was the depth of his commitment to the person of Jesus and the things that God was teaching him. And he talks in Corinthians about all the stuff that he goes through for the sake of the church. He talked about his beatings, his shipwrecks, the fact that he was stoned, the fact that he was jailed, the fact that he went without food, he went without shelter. He had this life of just sold out ministry for Christ, but it came at an incredible cost. Yet it never deterred Paul from this sort of deep-seated desire to share Jesus with the world. And then we find Paul, the great encourager. You know, Paul served Jesus and he served the church. And he knew that walking the way of Jesus would be difficult. He tells us that it's going to be difficult. And he knew that better than most because he was living that. But like a good coach encourages his team to press on and dig deep when the going gets tough, Paul encourages the church to appreciate the relationship they have with Christ and to find the deep joy and fulfillment that comes from Christ and to persevere in all circumstances. And we see these great encouraging verses. In Romans 8, he says, if God is for us, who can be against us? If God is for us, who can be against us? You know, the creator of the universe has got my back. What can be more encouraging than that? And then he says, he draws this analogy to like an athlete running a race, and he says, let's throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. What great encouragement. Guys, come on. Let's look up ahead. Let's look at Jesus. The stuff we go through, you know, we're going to do that, but God's with us. Let's just keep our focus on what matters. So they're, I guess, the four key themes. I'm going to ask the guys to come out. So Aaron and Lindsay and Chris and Ian. I don't know why there's chuckling when I ask Ian to come out. I've kind of been joking with him last week, and it's kind of like you'd never put anyone on a panel unless you know what they're going to say. But I've got... Ian's probably the most experienced of the fathers here. So we've got a real kind of variation across here because Aaron's our newest dad. So Aurelia is only about six weeks old. So Aaron's just out of the gate, and Lindsay's kind of got his kids kind of older and more mature. And then Ian's got a bit of a mix. So he's got some still at home. Well, yeah, I think the boys are married and they've got their own kids. So he's a grandfather as well. And, but he's got how many at home? Five at home, two out of home. So, yeah. Okay. So I'll get comfortable. I'll give you this mic, Aaron. And Chris is here to keep his dad honest. So. Okay, so I might start with Lindsay down that end. So, Lindsay, demonstrating our love for our kids can be challenging at times, and particularly when harder words are needed or lessons need to be learned. And so what are some of the ways that you've been able to show love to your kids, and how do you meet the challenge of showing them love when sometimes that love looks tough?
Yeah, okay. I answered this morning, and I've got no idea how to respond to that tonight, but I think love is a challenging one, and I think one of the things I did say this morning was, and I think this is true, is for a father to show true love, you know, we must love our wives well, and therefore we love our wives well, the children understand what love is and can example that and see that being lived out. So that's what I would say. What was the rest of the question? Sorry, brother.
So when love looks tough, how do you go in that situation?
Yeah, I'm not real good at that. I hand that over to Nicole. No, look, tough love is something that I think is just a constant battle, you know, to get it right. And I'd have to say that I quite often don't get that space right. It's a hard space to work in, you know, to show tough love to your kids. And I think it is a balance, you know, at times as a kid, depending on what age, stage they are in terms of that toughness, you know. When I was little, obviously I was probably a little bit more firmer, and as they got older and they got more responsible, which Chris is not there yet, but as they got there, that their responsibility you just ease off a bit in that tough love, even though I had to show him tough love today at home and put him on the floor. Yes, still number one in the house. So, yeah, I know, I just wanted to get that in. But tough love is a difficult thing, Punchy, I think, and it is hard for us fathers and mothers because we want to have a great relationship with our kids, but at times, you know, that means that we need to be strong and we need to be clear and we need to say no to things that, you know, we might feel that, you know, if I said yes, I can be there. They might like me a bit better, but at times you've got to say no. Am I going to next?
I'll give it to Chris. So, Chris, what's it look like for you being on the receiving end of your dad's love? Have you experienced that? And even in those times, can you remember an instance where he's actually had to be tough on you? And how do you think about that time on reflection?
Other than this afternoon when he tackled me onto the floor,
that's just all about mass. That's got nothing to do with skill.
Hi, Dad. Yeah, so I shared this morning that I went through a stage where I didn't want to go to youth group. I really didn't enjoy it because I had no friends there, and Dad was kind of like, no, you're going, and I ended up there every week somehow. But I think that was one instance. But another one was I probably was a bit of a wimp as a child, which is a fair cut. Thanks, Vic. That's my sister. I was very much a wimp, and I would come home crying a lot of days, be like, I got out in handball. And I think without the tough love, I kind of wouldn't have grown out of that. So I was, yeah, that's probably helpful there as well. I got a lot of tough love in that section. Mum and Dad were like, no, we're not even dealing with that. Go deal with yourself. So that's probably another area of tough love that I received. But I mean, now I can actually deal with it, which is a good thing considering I'm 20. But when I get in handball and oosh, I'm like, oh, okay, it's understandable. They're in kindy. But, yeah.
All good. Ian. So what's in the Roog Rock house, so you showing love to your kids, what's that look like? And what's the tough love look like as well?
Well, I think showing love is spending time with them. Like, you can buy them all the presents in the world, but all they really want is time with you. So you've got to buy presents that are fun so you can spend time with them. But No, really.
Like motorbikes and things you can blow up. And
guns, yeah. And screw boats and things like that. You know, you're getting there. But no, just spending time with them. And that's like Chris said, he didn't want to go to youth group, but I was always a bit opposed to youth group because I thought of myself as the youth leader. And we just did things together. Like, you know, did all sorts of things together. And it was good. Like, basically. And what's the next part of the question?
So in terms of those times you've had to be a bit tough when you're kids, how do you look at that on reflection?
I was probably too tough on them. I was probably not a good father at times. I get cranky, and that's not good. But they've come through it. They're all not too emotionally scarred, I don't think.
Well, I got to say, you know, I think when I hear your kids talk about you as their dad, it is always in the best terms. So I think you've done a great job, mate. So.
Flattered because I don't deserve it a lot of time. So, yeah, they're good and they're great.
Yeah, good. Thank you. And Aaron, tough love. What's that look like with Aurelia? Do you put her in like the baby cone of silence? Is that the...
She puts me through some tough love. now, I think love, you know, obviously at this stage is 100% just about sacrifice with not really getting much back. You know, like she, yeah, I was joking this morning that as someone who likes to make people laugh and she's not even smiling yet, like, what's the point? give me a call when she's ready and I'll kind of. but no, it's a lot about sacrifice at the moment, and it's just about, you know, I've learned a lot about dying to myself, but to be honest, I thought it would be a lot harder to sacrifice, and sometimes the sacrifices themselves are hard, but the desire to sacrifice is not hard when you love. I struggle getting up no matter what time of day it is. I struggle with, so, you know, I thought getting up in the nights and stuff, I mean, it's been pretty good the last few weeks because I've been sleeping through, but but, you know, like, yeah, it's exciting to be able to have someone to be responsible for, but there are definitely still times where it's tough, and I've realized that the harder thing is not choosing to sacrifice for her, it's actually choosing to sacrifice for Liz, which is kind of tying in with what Lindsay was saying about loving your wife is loving your kids as well, because, you know, if there was no one to change her nappy or to look after or comfort her, in a heartbeat, I can step in and do that. The problem is there is someone else who can do that. And sacrifice sometimes for me means going, yeah, sure, I have a desire to look after her, but is my desire, you know, like, am I willing to lay down for my life for Liz so that she can maybe get some sleep or feel some rest or whatever? And I hope I've been doing that okay, but there's definitely times where that's not been the case. And sometimes unintentionally, I'm sorry, I just don't wake up sometimes, but yeah, it's about sacrifice, and I think, yeah, as Lindsay said, piggybacking off that, as husbands, sacrificing on behalf of your wife as well, yeah.
So hang on to the mic. So, and the idea of actually having a dream or a vision for your kid and or your kids, and I'm not talking about it in the sense of a dream for what they will do. So it's not about my kid will become a brain surgeon and he'll have a house in the country and have four kids and three dogs, and it's not about that. It's more about a vision for who your children will be as people. So have you got any thoughts around you know, the importance of having a dream and a vision for your kids?
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah, obviously when you're in the pregnancy phase, there's lots of dreams of just who will this new human being be, you know? And Liz had always said, oh, I'd love to have a kid with red hair, curly red hair, with a lisp, that'd be cute. And I thought, you want our kid to be bullied? But no, we have... I've often had dreams of... Sorry to the redheads out there. I've always had dreams of, like, I hope my kid is just, like, you know, school captain material. I hope that my kid is someone who leads, who's really popular, who's really artistic, who's really sporty, who's really creative. And it's interesting getting closer to her being born. I had to kind of realize I have to kind of lay those down a bit, because she may be all of those things, she may be none of those things, and that doesn't change her value. And that what is most important is who she is, and what kind of character she has. And so, yeah, I've been thinking a lot more about what kind of person we want to raise her to be. And for us, our dedication is, you know, first and foremost, we want her to just be in love with God. We don't want to raise a church kid. We want to raise a God-loving kid, who hopefully the best place for that is in church. But we really want her to grow up just having a desire to seek out who God is and what His will is for her life, not because mum and dad were Christians, but because we introduced her to a God that she could fall in love with. And along the way, you know, if that means that she, you know, is a successful person in the world's eyes, then that'd be awesome. But, you know, we've got to be willing to go, okay, we don't need to put all of our other expectations on her about, you know, because Liz and I both did well at school. It's like, what if she's not smart? Like, that's okay, you know, like she's still got value. God can use her as long as she's a good person. We want to celebrate, you know, her being kind to people, being loving to people, and, you know, showing God's love to others. So.
Fantastic. Ian, you got to be flat out. Your dream balls, you got seven of them there in the air. And so what's your thoughts on the idea of having dreams and hopes and aspirations for your kids?
As far as career path, like you said, it doesn't really matter. Like Aaron said, like he had dreamt that they'd be talented, but I got all that. I haven't, they have. You know? So that dream's fulfilled. They're all very talented and very good at what they do. And but as far as a dream, a vision for their future is, so they follow God and they stay the course and stick at it, because it's so much better than the world. So, like, it gives you such a good foundation, and the rest of your life I won't say it won't be as hard, but you got something there to get you through rather than just stumbling along. You know, you might look successful, but are you? I've got something to read afterwards, and it sort of touches on that. Yeah. So that's about it. Yeah, right. That's what I can get it up.
And so, yeah, Lindsay, we'll go to Lindsay. Your thoughts?
Yeah. My vision for my kids, I think, was to build a better version than me, and to have kids. I wasn't too worried about what they would do, but in terms of the type of person that I wanted them to be, the type of caring, natured, loving, open, well-adjusted adults, you know, that's a lot of hard work to put that into practice, you know, in terms of how you act and how you care for them and how you love them as a father, and love them individually, you know. And it's not about I think someone talked about all the toys. It's just about whatever the kids are doing, just jump in and be there. You know, if it's a computer game or a movie or playing with outside on the bikes, or, you know, reading a book or not so. It was, fortunately, my daughter wasn't interested in dolls, so I didn't have to worry about that too much. But Chris was, yeah. But wow. I didn't have to hear that. It came from over there. But it is important. And look, you know, understanding that the vision is that, you know, we wanted to create a home that had a real Christian flavour in it, which I didn't grow up in. So understanding what that looked like and raising the kids in that, and hopefully not just them but their friends that they brought with them, raising them so that they understood who Christ was and the importance of having a relationship with Him.
So, Chris, how did you? What was your experience in terms of feeling, you know, dad, and well, it's all about dad tonight. So, dad supporting you in sort of reaching for your dreams and the things that, you know, you felt in your heart is where you wanted to go and things you wanted to do. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so when I was in year 11, I was obviously just starting the HSC kind of lead up to it, and I remember watching this video and coming home a few probably that night and being like, oh, I want to go to Bible college. And I guess that was the first time for like years I hadn't said I wanted to do teaching straight away. And so that was a bit of a, I think it was a bit of a shock to mum and dad, but they were really supportive with that. Obviously for the last 2 years, because I've only been out of school for 2 years, there a lot of the decisions have been on me, of where I want to go, and mum and dad have been supportive with whatever I've done and just helped me. Like last year I was doing Bible college and sometimes I was a bit stumped and dad was like, oh, here, this is what this actually means. I'm like, oh, okay, that makes sense now. But they've just given me the freedom to do whatever I want, no matter what it was. Even with sport, I love playing soccer, and I play soccer in Newcastle since I was like 11, and dad would drive me down there 3 days a week just to let me train, and then I'd come down another day just to play. So dad's always been really encouraging and always given me the opportunity to do the things I want to. And that's been really great because it means I've been able to learn a lot of things and learn a lot from dad sacrificing his own time for me.
Yeah, you used to have many a phone conversation with your dad while he was waiting for you to play soccer. It was a good time to talk, wasn't it? So to Ian, you know, having strong Jesus values for our kids, it's really important because it gives them a pretty good compass for life, doesn't it? So how do you go about sort of communicating and instilling those Jesus values into your kids?
Well, I probably don't do it as well as Sharon does. And Sharon's sort of done it longer than me. I wasn't probably that focused on that in the earlier years, probably only later years that I was more focused on that. So I can't take any credit for that. But what was the question again?
So how do you as a family sort of, or as a mum and a dad, like communicate those Jesus values and try and instill them in your kids?
Well, when we sit down for a meal, we always pray over night time before we go to bed, and just make it so it's not foreign to talk about it, and try and keep it in the centre.
One of my observations is how the Rugrocks as a family commit to the church community, because I think there probably wouldn't be a family here that travels the distance these guys do. They're probably 45, 50 minutes away, depending on who's driving. So I remember, like, I always associated with them being at Singleton until I went to their place for the first time. And it's not just at Singleton, but it's like way out the other side of Singleton. So, what a commitment you guys show to being part of this church family by making that drive and that every week commitment. So, that's awesome.
It's not that hard, Stu.
Yeah, but I'm just saying we appreciate it.
Well, so. It's the people and the fellowship and this church. Like, we could have went to a church in town, and we did for 5 years, but it just wasn't the same. So we just drive and listen to music.
Right. Good family time. Okay, and for you, Aaron, as you think about Aurelia in the future and kind of trying to instill these Jesus values in her, what do you think that might look like for you and Liz?
Oh, pretty much banning her from watching anything but Veggie Tales, just Reamer FM on 24/7. I think, you know, like what Ian said there really resonated about, you know, not making it foreign to have those conversations and just to do things that are normal. I think, you know, Liz and I kind of grew up in different versions of Christian homes. Mine wasn't a Christian home till I was in primary school and I was the first Christian in our home. You know, she grew up with two committed parents whose both their parents were ministers, so it was kind of a, you know, a bit different for her again. But yeah, we're both thinking a lot about it, and it's, you know,